Today on Maine Calling, artificial intelligence and our daily lives. These days, we're being barraged by scary headlines about artificial intelligence and how it's taking over the world. Some predict AI will put people out of work, even in fields like finance and law and computer science. We also hear about AI driving fake news and scams and spreading misinformation. I'm Cindy Hahn. In spite of all of this, AI has a useful side. People are finding ways to utilize it to help with day-to-day tasks, and in many cases, it is a valuable tool. Some are turning to AI for medical advice, including for mental health matters, which shows both promise in helping with non-critical issues, but also poses significant risks. Learn how artificial intelligence can be helpful and when to be cautious. Maine Calling is coming right up.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. The headlines about artificial intelligence are pretty scary. They say AI is taking over jobs and it's spreading misinformation and it's replacing human interactions. But meanwhile, AI has also more quietly become part of everyday life in our homes, in our schools, and in our workplaces. Today, we'll learn how people are putting AI to work for them in their day-to-day lives and what the benefits and risks can be. With me are Dr. Richard Corey, he's director and co-founder of the VEMI Lab at the University of Maine, and Dr. David Watts, he recently became the director of the Davis Institute for AI at Colby College, and he previously was a senior executive at IBM. We invite you to join the conversation. Have you embraced AI? And if so, in what ways do you find it helpful? Or are you trying to stay away from AI altogether? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And Rick, one of the challenges of even talking about AI these days is just defining what we're talking about. People really have all kinds of different definitions of what AI means, but it's not new. Artificial intelligence has been around since, I mean, calculators kind of count, right? And the early personal computers, and certainly Googling stuff is all AI. What is it right now, you know, showing up in these headlines about the latest extremely powerful capabilities of AI that sort of mean something new?
Today, I mean, the biggest thing is that AI really became sort of popular and part of the conversation when ChatGPT became a thing and consumers got easier access to it and their ability to suddenly, you know, write emails faster and better in ways in which they've never done before. And I think that we're looking at, you know, where we are today with AI. I mean, I'm not sure people realize that you're using it almost every day, whether you like it or not. Most of your searches now, as you just brought up, through Google or what have you, are heavily now AI influenced. As a matter of fact, in some day-to-day basis, people are now using in AI like a Gemini or a ChatGPT to do their searches online over just your standard Google search. And you're starting to see this more integration and how much, you know, every part of our lives are into it. I mean, phone calls, you guys, you know, receive phone calls, call the power company or something like that. You're usually talking to an AI agent before you actually get to, you know, a human.
Sure. So, you know, we had a note on Facebook about today's show saying, you know, I have not used AI and honestly won't if possible, but the note is on Facebook, right? So it's sort of you actually are using AI to some degree. But David, help us take that a little further. Like Rick said, you know, people oftentimes just equate AI with ChatGPT, but ChatGPT is just one method of utilizing AI, right? So what is it that the bigger thing that makes AI so powerful and frightening in some ways that is beyond what ChatGPT itself does.
Yeah, it's Cindy. First of all, thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here. And you said it well. AI has really been around for quite a while. I'd say since the 50s. IBM has actually been a part of that for since the beginning. And what has really happened is that the capability, think of the infrastructure that runs AI, has actually improved quite a bit, which enabled some of these larger language models to basically generate content. And that's where Gen AI came from. And that's really what, as Dr. Corey was saying, where AI really blew up in terms of the interactions that are possible with businesses and with consumers. So it has really become a part of everyday life for all of us.
Sure. And as I understand this idea, it just sort of exponentially, it's like, okay, it's acting kind of like a human brain, but now it can teach itself, it can program itself. That machine learning and deep learning is what is propelling the fear and the speed at which AI is taking off.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. That's the learning component is a huge part of it being artificial intelligence, right? That it actually learns from these reams of data and continues to learn, and therefore it gets better and better. It can get better and better at particular tasks, et cetera.
Oh, and I just wanted to ask you, by the way, Colby College did start a whole institute dedicated to AI, and I know you're fairly new to the position leading that.
Yeah.
Can you explain why this very high-tech field is now a priority at a small liberal arts college?
It's actually one of the things that drew me to Colby, because they were very pioneering in jumping into this early, even before ChatGPT. So Colby had some foresight on sort of the importance of what was happening in our society with respect to AI. And the other nice thing about being at a liberal arts college is that AI is very, I'll call it interdisciplinary, right? There are many different types of experts that come together to make a system really work. And that's kind of the nature of a liberal arts education, which I think when you marry those two at this time, I think there's a huge place for the liberal arts in helping to drive the transformation that AI is driving today. So I'm very excited about what will happen. And yes, there I'm also, very concerned about some of the issues that are out there.
Sure. And Rick, we have touched upon those concerns. There's these concerns about taking jobs and about misinformation, about replacing creativity. And I'm reluctant to go down those paths because there's a whole show in each one of those topics. So maybe if we can just shift and say, let's start with the basic fact that there are a lot of risks involved, but today's topic is, there are areas where you have more control over AI and how you use it, and it can be manageable and it can be helpful in our daily lives. So I wanted to just have you kick off some of how that can work in something we're already familiar with, like smart devices in our homes, right? You've got the thermostats that can adjust by themselves, or the lights that can be on automatic timers, that kind of thing. Give us some examples beyond those that AI is now enabling us to do to operate in our homes or live in our homes and go about our daily lives.
I absolutely be happy to. And one of the big areas we study, and to David's point, is this idea of how we put humans back in the loop and for data and information gathering, everything, and get their feedback. And in your home, that's in a great example of where things are. Certainly, you're going to start to see more and more AI into your I don't want to use the word your Apple systems, your Amazon systems that are within your home, but you're also starting to look at things like there are new programs that Amazon has been releasing where it's looking at fashion and what would look good on you. So you can kind of shop through and pull up your photo, and it would kind of give you advice on where things are. You're also starting to see things like health in the medical areas of one of the big areas that I find most interesting and most helpful is certainly with older adults and this idea of thriving at home and how can AI help you just remember something as simple as take your medication because you didn't. These are some companies and things that we've seen that are coming out, and you're starting to see, of course, with the innovation of more and more fully autonomous vehicles out there, that's another thing that AI is interacting with the people that are going on. There are aspects of your life that I wouldn't say it's as scary. It's different. I mean, with all technology, it's very, very different. I think that the idea here is that it sort of improves your life in a way in which it allows you to do more of what you want to do. And I think that if we look at it that way, it gets less scary.
I'm going to ask you to continue on with that thought and
Sure.
give some really specific examples for the category of like organizing information, right? So, say someone wants to make a budget or study for a test or something like that. What is it about AI that can take that to the next level?
What you can do at that point is like, say you're trying to gather, I don't know how many pairs of shoes would look good on you. Let's go with my fashion thing, even though I'm
Okay.
traveling in an area I don't know much about. It would take you in the past, it would take you quite a bit of time doing searches, digging through to find out all the manufacturers and all the other things that are available. Today, using AI, you can very quickly have it run out there and say, give me every boot with a steel toe that has this particular grip and it can be worked on this area, and it can start to give you a quicker breakdown. Where what I've been looking at is like, okay, then how much of that becomes more customizable for the person in their needs. So, for example, I don't know, you're an electrician, so you would need a boot that helps ground you a little better. I'm making this up as I go along, but the idea is that how do we use AI at that point to start to solve those problems of what you're looking for faster than it would take you. Just to go search around or drive around from, store to store and keep asking questions. Does
So
that get you
if,
where you're after?
yeah, I'm thinking, so say normally in the pre AI world, but we can do Google searches, right? So we search for best Mexican restaurant to go to or whatever in my area, and it would give you a whole bunch of links, and you'd click on those links and you'd search through those. Now, what does it do beyond that? What's the next step
Well,
beyond that?
in some of the apps that we've been looking at, for example, it knows what you like for food. So it can start to, instead of giving you 15, Mexican restaurants in your area, it can break down to these two have also been, rated the same way with other people, connect to what you're interested in and how. And take into your dietary concerns or any allergies or issues and compare that. I know out in California that the data coming out of restaurants is huge for that, and the ability to break down per person what you need. And that's something we would never know. You wouldn't even know from a Google search before of, this place can actually take care of it, or this place is something that I like and is very similar to that.
Sure. So the whole customization thing applies to a lot of different areas, and that's something that can often be a very good thing. David, you're in the field of education. How is AI being used by students or teachers, or ways that are proving to be really good uses of it?
Great question. I do want to touch on something Dr. Corey was just talking about, because I think you hit on an important distinction between what we're seeing with respect to AI and what people have been used to on Google searches, et cetera. And with Google searches, you're searching for an answer, right? What's the best Mexican restaurant in this area? And it gives you its best answer. People have to think about AI more like assistants. In fact, that's what they're usually called, these tools, right? AI assistants, where you're interacting with the tool. So it's less about getting an answer, it's more about asking it questions, seeing what it says, interacting with it. You can, you know, one analogy I've seen is like you have an intern, right, that you're interacting with about something, and so you go back and forth with them. They may draft, you know, can you draft a note to an important note to someone, and then you would review it, and so that aspect of reviewing it is extremely important with AI tools. And so, to getting to your question, I think we think that way in education, right? How do we use the tools not as answer generators, right? Because that's a shortcut that ultimately cheats the students, right? They're cheating themselves by taking those shortcuts out of their education. But how do we use the tools to enhance critical thinking, right? And by interacting with those tools as colleagues or as peers, are good ways to drive critical thinking. So it's changing not only how students have to think about interacting, but also how faculty have to think about their teaching.
So the first fear when ChatGPT became widely known was that students are just going to use it to write their essays for them or take their
Right.
tests for them or whatever. First of all, do you think that in reality that is happening a lot? But second of all, what's an alternative use for a student, for example?
Yeah, I think it certainly had been happening a lot. And I think one of the concerns that most academic institutions had early on was exactly that concern. And therefore, you know, many institutions banned AI, right, from the schools or colleges or universities. And I think with the recognition that since AI is out there, and as Dr. Corey pointed out, we're all using it, I think it's more important that we engage the students. And so at Colby, for example, we've actually built in capabilities so that all students have access to a safer place to interact with these tools. And then it's about training and teaching the best ways to interact with those tools.
Sure, and I heard that, you know, that organizing kind of ability that AI can help you with. A college student who would get I guess get the lecture maybe transcribed and then organized into notes that, you know, that helped with the studying process. So that's not really cheating, right? It's
Right.
excuse me, it's just taking the information and structuring it in a way. Is that something
Yeah.
that's a useful application?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Our faculty may use it to become more productive in how they prepare their lessons. So by using it to enhance your productivity, you can hopefully then spend more time on the critical thinking aspects of things, right? And it's not just for students or faculty. Anyone can think of productivity as a good way to utilize AI tools, right? Whether it's, you know, you want to draft a big complex email, and maybe the tool actually helps you get started, and so you can actually finish more quickly. Or you want to look at a big legal document, and you know, the tool helps you summarize it, but then you got to go in and validate that it has done all the right things in doing that.
Yeah, and
All
if I
right,
if
lots more to talk. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead,
I
Ron.
was just going to jump in and just say, if you haven't started using Notes yet on, like, you know, Zoom calls and Google Meets and everything, oh boy, is that much easier than taking your own notes when you get out there. That feature is phenomenal. So that's another thing to play with.
Gosh, and I still take notes by hand because I think it sticks in my brain more, but I could definitely
Oh,
see I'm
well.
probably missing something, so.
Know your learning. That's important too. Yes. Yeah.
All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break. We're talking about AI in our everyday lives. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn, and our topic today is artificial intelligence. Yes, AI is all over the place now, often as a threatening force that's taking over society. But there is some truth to that, and there is also the fact that we are examining how it's being used on a more personal scale and what it can do to help with daily life. How are people using it, and are there risks involved? My guests are David Watts, he's director of Colby College's Davis Institute for AI, and Rick Corey is director of UMaine's VEMI Lab, focused on human-technology interaction. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you worried about risks from using AI, or are you finding it can make your life easier? Email us at talk@mainpublic.org. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram, or you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Now, our executive producer, Jonathan Smith, couldn't resist having a little
Thank
bit
you
of fun
calling
with
calling.
This.
Do you have a comment or question to get on the air?
Oops. And Jonathan, we can hear you on the air. So he's taking calls right now. But as I said, Jonathan had this idea to go ahead and put our script for today's show into ChatGPT and see what it said. And it said, I'm summarizing some of it, but it said, this episode represents a thoughtful and well-structured attempt to move the AI conversation beyond fear and hype and into practical lived experience. This is the kind of discussion that's sorely needed as AI becomes more embedded in the fabric of daily life. So while that was nice to hear that AI liked our show idea, it introduced this concept that I think the term that's being used is sycophantic, that AI is kind of by its very nature programmed to support you and agree with you. And like that confirmation bias kind of idea that, you know, if this is what you like, then this is what it's going to tell you to like. And so, Rick, can you just talk about that a little bit? That's one of the risks, I guess, of using it in your day-to-day life?
Yeah, well, you know, everything has a certain level of self-serving to it. I mean, it's all a matter of, like, you know, how it was programmed or put together. And then, you know, we don't need to get into the concept of ghosts and stuff like that that show up within it. But, I think that using AI as another sounding board, you know, is perfectly okay, especially when you're getting information. I don't rely on it as the 100% answer for everything. I always say with everything that's out there today, you should go and double check it. And I think that, you know, the way in which most of this is coded is certainly, you know, help itself. And this is one of the ones where David might have an actual better answer to exactly how it was put together this way.
That was a good answer, but David, go ahead.
Absolutely, a great answer. And I mean, I think you touched on something, right? And it is all in the programming, right? The sound that you get, the tone that you get from it. And companies have experimented with it, but so you can have AI, they've leaned towards the more positive and optimistic, even when you might be talking about a subject that isn't. So that's where it comes in, and people recognize that the tone can be off at different points in time. And that's a true thing. And that's an evolving thing. It may change over time as well. I think one of the things to recognize about the concern, right, you're saying there's a concern in it, is that AI can sound very confident and be wrong, completely wrong. And that's why double checking, as Dr. Corey said, whatever answers you're getting, no matter how pleasant and confident the tool sounds, it's a program, and it's on the human to do the verification.
Well, that teased me up to the question I think a lot of people are asking, is this idea of AI becoming, you know, substituting for a doctor and turning to AI for medical advice, for a diagnosis, for, you know, what is this? What should I take? And that's, you know, the big question there is, yeah, maybe that's helpful if it's scouring the, you know, all the data out there and giving you what a doctor would probably tell you. But then you don't know what you don't know. Like if it's giving bad advice, you don't know that. And so just talk about that as, you know, where is it useful? Where is it not? And how do people even know when to question or check with someone else?
Yeah, you bet. And I think one of the things to come right back to is that concept of human in the loop. Dr. Corey mentioned it earlier. That aspect of always having a human as part of the validation of whatever the tools are doing. And when you get to places like healthcare, it becomes very, very important that that is the case, so that AI tools used by doctors are exactly that, they're assistants, and that the doctors are doing the validation. So higher level, we would call at Colby, for example, we say we're focused on human-centered AI. You're thinking about the benefits to humanity, and having a human in the loop is a critical part of how you validate anything that an AI tool is putting out.
Sure. Rick?
Yeah, I was just going to say that I've seen doctors use AI in a way in which it actually, helps them, say, determine the best course or gives them suggestion on the best course of medicine or what have you. But I don't think anybody's like using it as the final example. What gets scary is the part you brought up is when you're using AI for your own personal health and what you should take and move forward. And I think that to the point that we were just making is that, wow, that's fine, but you need to really get into the idea of, well, if you asked a crowd of people out in the middle of, are you okay with that as an answer? And double checking, as David keeps saying, you've got to check this information. And I also really encourage people, the more you use AI, check it. Ask, is this factual? Is this right? And you'll be stunned at sometimes it will like, wait, well, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
That you'll get that answer.
That's interesting. We do have an email from Jim, and it said one of your guests started out by referring to the non-human voices that answer as if they're human, like when you're, customer service type thing. Is there an agreed upon set of word choices to use so that all parties can be clear about the basic facts of the interaction? A year or two ago, I encountered by phone an automated phone answerer that replied, "Of course I'm a real person," but wasn't. So, like, it's this loop of like, if you're trying to get to what's accurate, but it's programmed. Is there a term? I've heard the term hallucinations used
Yes.
in AI. Is that what does that mean?
Yeah, that's a real term. And I think it's the nature of how generative AI is structured, right? That similar to humans, right? We sometimes fill gaps in a story with a story, right? Meaning gaps in our understanding with a story. And AI can do that, right? Because of how it works. It works when these neural networks. And so sometimes it can make things up. And that's a part of how generative AI works. And so we have to watch for hallucinations in our programming. And sometimes they happen when the training is missing aspects, right? And so finding those out, and you can imagine entire groups of people sometimes can be left out of training, which is what leads to things like hallucination and bias in some of these tools.
It's tricky. I was talking to a physician who was just testing out how AI could do in certain in subbing in for a literature search for studies that have been done. So looking into studies on the link between alcohol and cancer, and it was really great. It kind of did what a librarian would do, find all the studies and find all the research that's been done. But if you kept pushing it, it got to the point where it was like just making up names and making up
Right,
results. But the
right.
question, this is somebody who knew the study, so knew when they crossed over to the other side. But a
Yeah.
lay person wouldn't know that. So that's the big question, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's an example of a lawyer who used AI to get their validation of a case and then send that into the judge as though it was fact without cross-checking it, and I think got disbarred as a result. So it really is on the human to do the validation of whatever you're getting, right? Because you
Yeah,
can't get
if we have one point for this entire show, it is on you to validate the
Okay, there
data
we
that's
go.
coming out. Yeah.
Key takeaway. Okay, let's go to Laura calling from Kennebunk. Hi, Laura, go ahead.
Oh, yes, hi. Yes, I work for an agency for the blind and visually impaired, the IRIS Network. And we are finding AI, of course, is really helping our clients who are blind in the fact that there are apps that can read text and identify items in your home. And now we are all getting excited about the new Meta AI glasses. For a person, you know, who cannot see, the glasses, again, could read mail, can read labels in the kitchen, could identify, could describe a room or identify what's in front of you. So AI is certainly helping those who are disabled. Even if you're physically disabled in your home, you can have, you know, AI through your Alexa app, turn on lights, lock the door, turn the TV on. So it does have many applications for those who are disabled.
Wonderful. Laura, what a great example of, you know, technology working in all the right ways. Rick or David, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I can certainly chime in on that. And that's a great, great point that was made by the caller, because those are the types of benefits that are why AI is not going anywhere, right? I mean, for anyone who's waiting for AI to, like, it was a fad and it would go away, I think there are many, many benefits and really good things that have come out of it that people are going after. And I think those will continue to happen. Right here at Colby, we're doing, there's a professor who's actually working on using AI for the blind and low vision individuals, using, for example, a robotic seeing eye dog, right, to replace a normal seeing eye dog that can then describe things similar to how the glasses were being used in the caller's example. So great, great example of using AI for the betterment of humanity.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, David, last week we talked about robots. Actually, we talked about robotic advances.
Really?
And Rick's colleague talked about the guide dog idea because he himself is visually impaired. It's a wonderful example.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. This is where the world gets smaller, because those, yeah, Dr. Giannici is working in that area too here at the Femilab. But this is huge, by the way. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I wanted to thank Laura for calling. Because I was going to try to get to another call, but go ahead, finish your thought.
Oh, I was just going to say this area of accessibility of whatever that you need access for is that, man, this is where AI is a huge push forward. And that, you know, just reading a room, finding an empty chair for somebody who's blind or visually impaired, that is a big deal. And yes, the Meta glasses and there's been a lot of other companies out there that have got some sort of a visual computer vision system that translates. It's huge. It's a big, big jump forward.
Okay, well, let's go to another caller who I think has another use for AI. Lucky, calling from Portland. Hi, Lucky, go ahead.
Hi, it's so great to be here. I am currently getting my master's in mental health counseling, and I've been in higher ed since 2016, so I have been going through the process of adapting to AI in the use of academia. And I think it's really hard to, like, maintain this idea of, like, it's important to adapt and be open to AI, especially when it comes to, like, organizational things and problem solving. I feel like it can be so productive. But I also worry about our ability to think critically about what we're consuming through AI, especially when it comes to the mental health counseling field. I worry about confidentiality. I worry about misdiagnoses. I worry about not capturing the nuance of human experience. How do we, like, separate the self from AI, and how do we apply critical thinking to something so complicated and knowledgeable and vast?
Great points. Thank you. Thank you, Lucky. David?
Yeah, great, great, great question, because it also points out another important aspect. And you mentioned, for example, mental and behavioral health. We just at Colby landed an NSF grant where a psychology professor and a computer science professor are going to work together on exactly the challenges that the caller alluded to, which is those are difficult challenges in terms of training and making sure that an AI tool understands who they're dealing with, right? How do they then adapt and adjust? You mentioned some of the tone examples, but it can be very, very detrimental if you're dealing with people with mental and behavioral health issues and going and sending them in the wrong direction. So, that's a huge area of focus and why we landed that NSF grant to go after it. A very important concern is how do you make sure that we are doing the training such that the AI tools are giving the right advice in all contexts? And so that's something called context-aware AI that is extremely important for how we go after places like mental and behavioral health.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about that, about the sort of companion role that AI can serve, but we do need to take another quick break. Our conversation today is about AI in our daily lives, and our phone number is 800-399-3566. Thank you to Lucky for that great call, and this is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. The capabilities of AI are growing at an exponential rate. It's like a brain that can teach itself to think. That can be good and bad. We're finding out how this powerful technology can be used by individuals for things like organizing information or customizing your entertainment or shopping, and for companionship and also advice. Joining me, Rick Corey is with UMaine's VEMI Lab, and David Watts is with Colby's Davis Institute for AI. Share your comments and questions. Do you or someone you know use chatbots like ChatGPT, and if so, how? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram, or you can call 1-800-399-3566. And David, we were talking about this idea of, you know, AI is even someone to talk to, a sounding board. Some people I know that's been very useful. It could be someone helping you with relationship advice. You use an AI chatbot for that. You could I've heard using it for practice job interviews. So those seem like good ways to have someone to talk to via AI. But then there was the very well-publicized case recently when a teenager who took his own life had been using AI in that companion role, somebody to talk to, and it seemed to have steered him to encourage his suicidal thoughts. And so, you know, here's a really big case of the good and the bad of the role as a person to talk to. So, you know, you mentioned some of that. Yeah. Finish up that
yeah.
thought.
Yeah, no, you're spot on, and I think that's one of the real dangers of the fact that these are tools that have to be validated and verified. And I think one, it is on the companies that produce these tools to be aware of these downfalls and do everything in their power to minimize them. And then it's very important that the public is also aware that these tools have that ability to give the wrong information. We talked a little bit about being context aware and recognizing when you're heading, it's heading down the wrong path. And so that's a real risk that you raise, Cindy, that that everyone has ownership in making sure that we minimize and mitigate that risk.
Sure. I think we've got a related question coming in from Glenn calling from Orono. Hi, Glenn. What did you want to talk about? Oh, Glenn, are you there? Oh, we just lost him. Let's see. I will see if we can hear from John. John calling from Coral.
It is not. Hello?
Hi, John. Are you there? No, yeah.
Yes, I am. And my concern about AI is that I think AI is wonderful and I've used it. My concern is how soon is it going to become Googleized, where the developers and the companies that control it are selling or having their programmers and paying their programmers and paying the storage to come up with data that has been advertised for and paid for over all the other data.
Oh, I see. Just the sheer commercialization potential of something like this. Which one of you wants to take a stab at that? Go ahead.
I'll give it. I mean, this is that David and I keep making that point about that we've got to be conscious about why it's giving the answers that we're after. And to your point about which data is more important than other data and which one gets pushed up higher, that's a tough one. I don't, you know, I'm not sure, and this is, I guess, the scary answer, I'm not sure we would know. Like if somebody decides that this particular data or somebody, you know, pushing the idea of, I don't know, grass over rock driveways, I don't know. I don't know how we would get to that point, but it is a concern, and I wanted to validate that is a concern, but I think a bigger thing we need to do is keep asking, you know, questions, and not only questions of the answers, but questions back to the AI. Is this you think the best solution? Is this really where it is? That's a tough one.
And I would say companies have to always be weighing the difference between profit, right, which is what they're going after, and the repercussions of what they do, right? So overly marketing something, sometimes people vote with their feet and go somewhere else, right? And to someone who says that they're not going to do that. And so I would say, you know, one is be as informed as possible and know and learn sort of what the companies are doing, and then decide which platform you go to based on that.
Great. Well, thank you, John, for your comment. And Glenn, I think, is back. Do we have you on the line now? Glenn from Orono?
Yeah. Sorry about that. I pressed the wrong button. You got my technical competency on display right there.
We've all been there.
Couple points. One, on receiving the answers, the tone is very misleading. AI, at least ChatGPT that I've used, it comes back with such cheerful certainty and doesn't know what the heck it's talking about. And it does it with such certainty. So people that are new to it just can get waylaid by that. On the other end, on framing the question, I can't emphasize too much how much you have to narrow the question. Because I applied for a job as a driving instructor once, and they had this test. You had to tell the instructor how to put on a jacket, and he would only do exactly what you told him. And you try it sometime. It's like telling a 2-year-old how to, you know, fix a carburetor. It's just if something only does exactly what you tell it, it's extremely difficult.
That's such an interesting
point. Those two things out.
Yeah, Glenn, when we had our show on humanoid robots last week, they explained why it's so difficult to just get, with all the technology we have, just to be able to pick up a glass, because you don't think about all the little, you know, fudging and adjusting that a human hand will do to do that. And so I think that's the same idea. Rick, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say there is a lot, and Glenn's point, there is a lot of training that actually needs probably to go in to teach people how to ask more details. And this is, Glenn brings up a great point. If you're looking for a very, very specific answer, boy, you've really got to ask AI, write out a good paragraph of what you're after, what you're looking for, where your concerns are to get that answer. And if you don't, you're going to get that cheerful, happy little, you know, here's your random generic answer out there. And I think that, now that AI is really integrated into our lives on a regular basis, we need to start, you know, teaching people that simple questions don't sometimes work. And I think that my excitement moving forward for the future is, as we start to get away from what I've been referring to as generic AI and getting to a point of more customized AI per person, you're gonna start getting closer answers to where you're going, because it sort of knows what you're after. It's already doing that in some level. The more questions you ask, the more it's getting a background on that.
So there's a whole area of jobs that can be created that AI can't replace, which is teaching people how to use AI, right? I mean,
There you go.
it's kind of meta, I guess.
We'll give it a little time, maybe.
So here's a comment from Jen on Facebook. I have a very healthy level of critical skepticism about how integrated AI is becoming in all aspects of society. I do have to admit, though, that as the parent of a child with significant diagnosed learning challenges, certain AI-driven tools that transcribe, read aloud, and summarize can be transformational in opening up the world's opportunities to many people who would have otherwise been held back. So again, similar to earlier, I believe Laura was talking about, for those with certain disabilities or needs, there's a world of possibility with AI. I was going to ask actually along those lines, it's the translation from language translation abilities seem like they're also quite transformational in what you can do. It's beyond Google Translate now, right?
Because you can have conversations in a different language,
Just
right?
in
In
real
real time.
time.
Yeah,
In real
real, yeah,
time.
which is amazing. Yeah.
So describe how that works. I mean, maybe not the technology of how it works, but what's it like when you use it?
Well, so a big part of it, I mean, these are large language models. They operate based on language, and a big part of it, a big part of the training that you would want to learn when you're interfacing with these models is called prompt engine. Some people call it prompt engineering, right? Or how do you ask it the right questions to get the answers that you want? And the beauty of it now that you're pointing out is you can do that with other languages. So if someone speaks a different language and interacts with the tool, it will follow the same rules of the algorithm, and have conversations with you in different languages. So that's a pretty cool thing if you're learning a language and want to actually immerse yourself in the language. You can do that a lot better now with AI tools.
That is very cool. Let's hear from Tom. He's calling in from Owl's Head. Go ahead, Tom.
Yes, hi. My point has to do with AI and medicine. There's currently an application for your phone out now called Health Bank One. And what it does is you can download your medical history, all your medical history and your medications that you're on into the application. And the application will use ChatGPT to, if you have, an affliction, say you have a sore knee or something, it knows your medical records, it knows the medications you're on, and it can provide a, pretty well-informed, possible diagnosis for the affliction that you have. And that application's out there now. It's, kind of interesting. It kind of cuts through, the fuzz, I guess, without having your medical information. ChatGPT can just come up with a diagnosis based on anything, but having all this information, it makes the diagnosis more clear.
That's interesting because that does seem to be a little bit different in how similarly it imitates what a doctor would do anyway, right? Yeah. So potential there, potential for a good application there. Let's see if we can squeeze in one more caller. And I wanted to see about going to Tim, who is heading up to Aroostook, right?
I am in the car heading to Aroostook. I love the conversation. I come from the AI space on the human capital management side. I've been in it for about 20 years, and I had the first application in AI within the applicant tracking system route, which is that's the system that actually, when you apply for a job, goes into the system and it routes information all about the candidate on the applicant. And actually, on the recruiting side, on in-house, actually goes in and pulls down and selects candidates individually. I've been in the AI space for a long time, and I don't, there's a lot of concerns. I hear it day in and day out. I just came back to the HR Tech Conference out in Vegas, and the biggest concerns that people are having right now is how do they game the system? How can we beat the system? How can we get in and around the applicant tracking system, the logic of the way the pattern recognition is on the applicant tracking system? So, but let me tell you, there are a lot of problems there we're working on, and I'm kind of a diehard, passionate person when it comes to AI in the space, and there's a lot of issues with it that people are concerned about. And there's two different sides, right? You get generative AI and you got agentic AI, which is more of like robotic automation today. I think it is fantastic on daily tasks for situations like warehousing and robotic automation, and you can control the machine. And
yeah, Tim, sorry, but we're just about out of time for today, but you brought out a whole bunch of things that we want to talk about on future shows about AI and all of the promise and the peril with this technology. So thank you for calling in. And yeah, any like 10-second bottom line, Rick, you want to share?
Spot on. Everyone's going to try to hack a system. You know, it's a matter of, you know, how we protect from it. So, yeah.
Right. Okay, so we just need to keep our eyes open, right, David?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's the whole spectrum. You have to look at it. The last caller was talking about how excited they are about certain applications and some of the dangers that are, and we have to pay attention to both ends of that spectrum as we use AI
lesson.
In our everyday lives.
Well, thank you both for joining us. That was Dr. David Watts with Colby College and then Dr. Richard Corey with UMaine. And today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. I'm Cindy Hahn. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.